America. My name is Robert Chernin with the American Center for Education and Knowledge. Thank you so much for joining us again for yet another podcast. At ASIC, we believe in American exceptionalism and will always defend it and the code of personal responsibility and individual freedoms that go along with it. Our job, honestly, is also to help you make sense of the mess out there and post-election. Lord knows there seems to be a lot of that right now. We also talk a lot about a divided America and how we reject a divided America. And if there's one thing that certainly seems evident after this election is that America remains more divided than ever. That's a problem. Also, the real question is, and this is going to be the Election Integrity podcast, is to discuss the integrity or confidence level in the election and did we get it right? Because at the end of the day, that's more important than who wins or loses this election. Everyone takes sides on this, I get it, but does the system work? And to help us make sense of all of this, we have with us Jay Shepard, Vice Chair of the Republican National Committee, and a frequent guest on Of the People, Dr. Bruce Abramson, expert extraordinaire on oh so many things, including elections and election integrity. Dr. Bruce, Jay, welcome to Of the People.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert. It's great to be invited on. I think this is an exciting time, exciting moment. And, you know, what you've done with these podcasts have been pretty amazing. And hopefully this one lives up to expectations.
I'm hoping you could fill me in. I haven't been paying attention. Has anything interesting happened this week?
So as we go to record this podcast, obviously the election is undecided. What we're really talking about is the integrity of the election. And I have you both on, obviously, for your expertise and not on some level, the way we look at this is not because the results of the election matter as long as we got it right. And obviously that's very much in the balance right now. Is there integrity to our election process? Right. So what I want to ask both of you, and Jay, I'd like to start with you, is based on what you've seen so far, how would you assess the integrity of the election process? And maybe not did we get it right, because that remains to be seen, but are we getting it right?
I think it goes back to the original premise that no crisis will go unused, or whatever that saying is by the Democrats, that they've used the whole COVID thing to find ways to mess with the election voting, to mess with our system, and even put the whole thought of, you know, democracy and the republic in jeopardy by using a COVID excuse for changing the way Americans have voted for centuries. Very, very concerned about the integrity of the election. There is no way that it's conceivable that some of the results are the way they are, that the changes that happened at the last minute and the movement within the after hours part is inconceivable in my mind.
So you raise an interesting point. Dr. Bruce.
Yeah.
We go to bed election night and yeah. Trump is comfortably ahead in five or six states and they stop counting. And essentially we wake up the next morning. This is an oversimplification. And within the next 24 hours, somehow Trump is either even or behind and Biden is ahead. So the question is there integrity to this election process? And how did mail-in ballots affect this process beyond the normal election cycle that we're used to seeing for the last 200 years?
All right, so not only is there no integrity to this process, there's no integrity to this process by design, by design. You know, I write, one of the reasons I refer back to what I write is that when you wake up and find out that something happened, anything happened, and you start hearing the explanations, it's easy enough to say, oh yes, I knew that all along, or to start sounding like a kook or a conspiracy theorist if you say the story that's being told by the mainstream is wrong. One of the reasons I write is to keep my own sanity, because I know that the world around me is crazy. And I have been writing for 6 months that anybody who knows anything about systems theory understands that if you change your procedures and your processes going into a major event, you are setting it up for failure. In fact, you are guaranteeing failure. The changes, every change that's gone in to the election laws, nominally because of COVID, was designed to produce failure. It was designed to do exactly what we're seeing, to create doubt that got things into the bureaucracy and the courts. And the reason for that, and this comes right out of the literature, the progressive literature on resistance tactics and regime change tactics, is simple. Opposition movements have to move to where they are strongest. And the progressives are strongest among bureaucrats and the judiciary, far stronger than they are among voters. So they designed the system that would reduce the integrity of ballot distribution, reduce the integrity of ballot collection, reduce the integrity of ballot tallying, guarantee that the decision makers would be bureaucrats and judges, and try to play there. And they've done it very well. It was predictable. It was predicted. It's exactly what we're seeing.
So, Jay, the question then becomes, because from my perspective, it seems like Trump and the Trump administration is fighting this battle alone. Now, again, as I said earlier in the podcast before both of you came on, is to me, it's not even important whether Trump wins or Biden wins, that there's integrity into this process. But really, I guess what I want to understand is what is the process going forward as far as the Republican or RNC is concerned to try to question the process, make sure the process was fair, make sure there's transparency in the process? Where are we at on that?
One of the things that's really important to look at is where we are with proof of irregularities. And I think what we're seeing is the RNC is putting together and have in place a large group of lawyers in important key battleground areas, whether it's Philadelphia, even we're taking another look in Michigan, what's going on in Nevada and in Georgia. So we've got boots on the ground in terms of the legal process being put into place. To come out stronger and talk about the integrity of the elections without any proof isn't really something that the RNC wants to get into yet. We're talking internally and know that it all happened, but we want to come out publicly and really state that here is the proof. And we've got lawyers filing lawsuits to stop the process. And I think you're going to find that there's a momentum building within the Republican ranks that are going to come out and support the president, who has got out very far in front of all this 6 months ago, a year ago, talking about what was going to happen with the mail-in ballot situations. And he very much predicted what is happening now. I think the RNC has taken a more measured approach, and the GOP leaders are also doing the same thing, so that we can all come out at the same time and say, hey, we're not just guessing, we're not just predicting, we're actually going to show you where the irregularities are. I think one of the things you saw in Nevada, where we've come out with specific allegations that are provable, that there are 10,000, in the neighborhood of 10,000 votes from people who do not live in Nevada. And the National Voter Registry is showing that. There's another case in Nevada where there's lawsuits over 3,000 ballots that are illegally cast. So we're being very measured in terms of coming out with very strong to support what the president is saying, but coming out with more specifics. And I think that's what the holdup is right now.
So Dr. Bruce, I mean, we're talking about either irregularities or voter fraud, obviously. The question is, historically, how prevalent has voter fraud been either at the national level or, to the best of your knowledge, at the state level? I mean, we cited in an email blast we sent out earlier this week, certain instances there were of fraud that were indisputable. There was one in Paterson, New Jersey. I think the person got sentenced to jail for vote, you know, voting mail fraud. And the Heritage Foundation had also come out with a report recently, I would say 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, about documenting voter fraud. How prevalent is voter fraud, and how would you, I mean, what do you define as voter fraud?
All right, voter fraud is widespread. It is widespread. And we saw it most recently coming out large scale in the 2018 elections, where there were, where there are huge numbers of harvested ballots that were counted late. And on election night, we went to bed with seven Republicans with comfortable leads in California House seats, and all seven lost, 7 of 7. Okay, I mean, we saw this, that was the dry run for what we're seeing now. This is large scale fraud. Now, the problem is that people play fast and loose with what constitutes evidence. In order to have sort of what we might call incontrovertible evidence of fraud. You have to have people who are willing to spend a great deal of money and a great deal of time reviewing evidence with a fine-tooth comb, okay? Because there is always a benign explanation. For example, here's one I came up with this morning. Let's suppose I place 1,000 ballots on a table in the middle of a mall, okay? All postmarked, you know, all pre-addressed to go back to where they need to go, all postmarked appropriately, and all you need to do is fill them out and drop them off. And I come back a half an hour later, and all 1,000 are gone. Well, any reasonable person would conclude something fishy is going on. But of course, it doesn't prove fraud. Maybe an elderly nun walked by and said, oh, good, I can distribute these comfortably to all the people in the convalescent homes I work at. Could have happened. Seems unbelievable. It could have happened. The question is always, I mean, at an evidentiary level, we've got a huge problem here in that the chain of custody that goes through a ballot is completely compromised, and everybody knows it's compromised in ways that would not be accepted in any court. But proving that there was a specific fraudulent step in there is much harder, and it takes a lot of work. Right? It's one thing to say, hey, there were 1,000 more votes cast in this district than there are registered voters in this district. It's another one to find which specific 1,000 ballots were fraudulent, right? And who's got the money or time for that?
And I think one of the big things that's happened here is with the mail, I call it mail out ballots, because we've always had a system of absentee ballot voting that seems to have worked in many cases, but now they've mailed out ballots that people haven't even requested them, is it gives another layer of deniability for voter fraud. Where we're seeing voter fraud in some of these major cities, Philadelphia and Detroit, for years and years, it just gives them another layer of plausible deniability that, you know, prove it to us. And I think one of the things you hear people saying all the time is there's no proof of voter fraud. They never say there's no voter fraud. They always say there's no proof of voter fraud. And every criminal you know always says, prove it. You can't prove I murdered my wife. You can't prove this. You can't prove that. So now they've got themselves in a position where they've added this mail-in part of it that makes it harder and harder to prove it. And in the long run, very few people go to jail anyway. So they get away with it.
So what you're really saying is this is like Big Julie from Guys and Dolls, which I know I'm dating myself. 22 indictments and no convictions, right, is what you're basically telling me. Look, I have friends, plenty of them from high school that I'm still in contact with and around the country who have gotten 2, 3, or 4 absentee ballots or mail-in ballots sent to them. As a matter of fact, if you check them on my Facebook page and you go back, you know, 3, 4 weeks, you'll see a bunch of them said, hey, I got 3 ballots. I got 4 ballots. Now, they didn't send in more than 1 ballot. But I would assume that people less scrupulous than them would. So here we are, right? We have Arizona.
Well, even more than that, unless they shredded those ballots, they have no idea somebody else sent them in. If they took them and tossed them in the trash, somebody could take them out.
Good point. So let me get back. So we have Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, 6 states. Where are we in the process in each of these states? And I think, Jay, let's go to you just in terms of what's the latest update. All the information we get from the media is skewed. Even Fox News is being accused of having their thumb on the scale a bit these days.
It's actually 7 states because we want to talk about Michigan. We're going to do a recount in Wisconsin. We're looking at some real strange numbers in Michigan.
Is that an automatic recount in Wisconsin?
It's not an automatic, but you have to request it because it's 1%, which means you don't have to pay for it.
Okay. But can they deny the request for a recount is the question?
No, because it's a 1% difference in that race.
All right.
The difficulty is that some states like Michigan, for instance, if you want to recount Michigan, you're going to have to pay for it. And that discourages a lot of people from doing it. So we've got those 2 states that are still in play with some irregularities, and there may be some legal challenges in Michigan that may allow for some recounting in certain districts. Pennsylvania, it appears that there's still a great number of ballots uncounted. one of the interesting things in Pennsylvania is not just the presidential race, but there were three House races that were flipped yesterday. As of yesterday, they were flipped from Democrat to Republican. Today, suddenly, they're back to being held by Democrats. So there's irregularities beyond just the presidential race in Pennsylvania that no one can account for. Found ballots all over the place, uncounted ballots, and no reason given for why that has happened. And I think that's why you're seeing Pam Bondi and Rudy Giuliani focusing on Pennsylvania, because that's where we're going to see most of the action. Right now, it looks like we're down a little bit. And as we speak, I think in about an hour, Nevada is going to come out with some more numbers, with some new tallies that have come in, making the race even closer than it was. The latest numbers in Arizona show the president has cut Biden's lead from over 200,000 down to 41,000, with a great deal of votes still to come in for Maricopa County. So things actually look good. And one of the tough things, it's like watching football. And if the officials on the field call a touchdown, there has to be irrefutable evidence to reverse the call. So it's really important that we win in Arizona. And it's very important that we win in Georgia as well, because it puts you in a better challenge situation when you challenge ballots. Georgia right now is really coming down to some of the overseas ballots. And we always talk about the military ballots that need to come in and be counted. And they aren't always counted. And in many cases, because they say the election is won by enough, they don't even count the military ballots that come in. It's not just the military that are voting, it's their families as well. So if you look at Georgia, it has a good deal of overseas ballots that have not been counted yet. And they tend to vote conservative. So we're looking at some real opportunities in most all of these states. There'll be a total recount in Georgia as well. Very concerned about Senator Perdue getting over 50%, so there's no runoff election there. So there's a lot going on and nothing is firm. And anyone who's calling this election one way or the other right now is really going out on a limb.
Okay, so prognostications. Dr. Bruce, how do you see this playing out? And which cases, if any, do you think make its way up to the Supreme Court? I'm not asking you for an outcome. I think the analogy of a football game is probably correct. I don't think we're even at halftime. I think the game is going to go four quarters, and I think it'll be decided, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the game. But where are we at? How do you play this out? Which cases get up to the Supreme Court, and how do you see that going?
All right, look, absent fraud, I am thoroughly convinced that Trump won Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina. I am less certain about Nevada and Arizona. I believe that in all of these cases, the Democrats are going to keep finding ballots until they've gotten a lead. I think that in several of these cases, certainly North Carolina, Georgia, and Michigan, the lead is not only in the presidential race, it's in the Senate race. I think that John James was hit with many of those same fraudulent ballots, or he would be seated. I think that it's important to them to get to a second runoff in Georgia, because then they can focus all their money there on the two runoffs to try to gain control of the Senate.
Okay, but let me ask you. So we can send a man to the moon. We invented the internet. How do we have such trouble counting ballots? And in addition to that, how do you count ballots, figure out the Senate race, but still don't have the presidential race numbers decided when they're on the same ballot?
Well, I mean, people can and do split ballots, and there are always some number of people. The number of votes you're going to get as you go from the top to the bottom of a ballot is always going to decrease. Okay, that's fairly standard. But look, you ask which of these things are going to go to the Supreme Court, what's going to happen in the courts. The bottom line is there is not a single institution in American life, not one, that in my opinion can point to its performance in the 21st century with pride. There are a lot of institutions in American life that have great reputations held over from the past, but I can't think of a single one that has performed adequately, forget stellar performance. I can't think of a single one that can point with pride to its 21st century performance. Now, you know, if the Supreme Court is the last one standing, perhaps they will stand up and say there has been massive fraud here. But in fact, what you talked about with the RNC, what you talk about with individual senators, is this basic notion of people looking at it. I mean, you've got people on the inside, you got people who are comfortably in the elite, and most of them are going to say, okay, if we're now a banana republic, there are new rules, and my job is to learn those rules and figure out how to make a niche for myself. Remember, it's very important. You know, I like to talk about the Washington Generals, who are the excellent professional basketball players whose job is to lose every game to the Harlem Globetrotters, right? A banana republic, we become a banana republic, we'll need an opposition party. It needs to score points occasionally. It just can't ever win anything meaningful. And there's a lot of money to be made by the people who want to fill that role. So many of them will fall in line. If we have a single functioning institution, Trump will be inaugurated. If all of our institutions are gone, and in fact, we've left our citizen republic phase and moved into our banana republic phase, then that's where we are.
One of the big concerns, and I want to ask you, Robert, especially and Bruce, that, you know, the irrefutable evidence. And let's say that we find fraud. We find fraud in Michigan. We find fraud in three or four of these states that make a difference. What is the remedy? How do we overturn a result that's been announced by these bad actors in these bad states? So what is the real remedy out there? And, you know, just thinking how stressful life might be for us, think how it is for Amy Barrett right now on the Supreme Court, and where she has to make some decisions and some tough calls and the backlash that's going to come in her direction. But really, help me out with what would the remedy be if fraud is found in these states? Do we re-vote? Do we declare a winner that the votes don't support? What is that remedy?
Well, I can tell you one of the things that people are looking at is Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, which was really put in there for slavery and to make sure that the slaves' vote counted, you know, back in the day. But that could be used to reapportion electors. And again, someone smarter than me, Bruce, help me out here, because I've just told you everything I know. I think that's possibly one solution to all of this. I think we've never done a revote. It would remain to be seen how you would do that and what happens January 20th, because of course you're going to get outcries that, see, we told you Trump won't leave office. And again, let's be really clear here. And Jay, I know that you're part of the RNC, but full disclosure, I know I've known you a long time. And like you, you know, I know you're more concerned about the transparency and the integrity and the honesty of the process than any specific result. So that this is, to those of you who are listening, none of what you're hearing is about trying to make sure that Trump wins or Biden loses. What we're really concerned about here is the integrity, the transparency, the integrity of the process, and that we got it right. Because America is already divided. If this election has shown us anything, it's that we're more divided than ever. At best, we have a constitutional crisis. At worst, we have arms insurrection somewhere. And that's really a concern. But someone smarter than me, and Bruce, this is where you step in. Someone smarter than me is going to have to answer that question, because I just told you about everything I know.
So the answer is we are in completely uncharted territory. Nothing close to this has happened, at least since 1876, okay? The election of 1876 was deeply contested, but fortunately, that was still in the era when things got knocked out in the back rooms. And I believe that the resolution there was that the Republican candidate, Hayes, was handed the election for president, and the Democrats were given all three or four contested Senate seats. So that was the compromise that would work, that was worked out to me in the back rooms. I feel safe in saying that no deal like that is going to be hammered out this time. Somebody is going to have to stand up and decide the buck stops here. What we saw in 2000, by the way, was the Supreme Court was the Supreme Court doing that. Now, I should say in 2000, I was working as a volunteer for the Gore campaign. I got very involved with the folks at DNC headquarters late in the game. I was brought down to Broward County as a recount observer. I went down there as someone with a background in data integrity. And unlike most people, I came back saying the process was about as good as anybody could have handled. Now, the Supreme Court stepped in largely because they wanted the country to have a definitive answer. I was disappointed with the answer they came up with. I agreed that they had jurisdiction to come up with that answer. I also think that the reasoning on that answer, I've always thought it was bizarre, and it will get in the Republicans' way this time. So I should ask you guys, do either of you know what the actual holding in Bush v. Gore was?
I do not.
So the actual holding went like this. Suppose there is a state that says, well, either I can certify the results I have now, which I know are problematic, and make the safe harbor deadline, which means that my electors will definitely get to vote in the Electoral College, or I can take more time, make sure I get the right result, but probably miss that safe harbor deadline, which means that I know I'll be sending electors that represent my state's will, but the House might refuse to let them vote. Okay? If those are the two choices facing a state, the Supreme Court's holding in Bush v. Gore was that no reasonable legislature would prefer to get things right than to be timely. Now, I've always hated that. I think that's absurd. I can see reasonable people going either way, but that was the holding. No reasonable legislature would prefer to be right than to be timely. So I think that will get in our way. I thought it was wrong.
So, all right. So as we close out this podcast, Jay, what's your prediction? Not who wins, but how does this play out? How long does it play out? And is there confidence? Will there be confidence level in the results?
There will never be confidence level in the results. The nation's far too divided to have confidence one way or the other. We're all out there looking for some sign that reinforces what we already believe. And I think there's enough on both sides that everybody can find something they like through the process. I think this is going to continue. I think the deadline, you know, December 13th, December 14th, it may go that long with lawsuits. And you're going to see all kinds of questions and none of those questions will be answered. And I think it's a really sad day for America that we even have to question the integrity of our voting system in this country. And it's a shame. And the mail-in voting has been very, very bad for this country. And we really need to find a way to have people stop saying it is the way we do it in the future.
Dr. Bruce, final word to you. How, when, and where does this end? And what's it look like?
Nothing like putting
you on the spot.
However it ends, half the country will be pleased with the result, half the country will be displeased with the result, and most of the country will not look beyond that. I can tell you right now that absolutely nobody who cares about the integrity of our system or who knows anything at all about system integrity and data integrity believes that we held the free and fair election in this country. Okay, it's just not conceivable. The procedures were too badly compromised. They were too badly compromised by design. I believe that the buck will stop with the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will then have to decide what the evidence is, what the standards are, what the remedies are. There may be states that missed the safe harbor deadline. That's never happened. We just don't know. We are in completely uncharted territory here. There are, even if the Supreme Court rules against the president, people are worried what happens if he doesn't leave office. If he loses at the Supreme Court, he will leave office, but that doesn't mean he has to concede. He can get up and give a speech that says, I won this election. There was massive fraud. The courts tell me that we were unable to prove it. They clearly have the ability. I'm stepping out, but you should know. The president you're inaugurating got there by fraud and you're living in a banana republic. He could give that speech. And quite frankly, if that's the way it goes, I hope he does, because people need to wake up. The one positive thing to come out of this, I believe that the Republicans will hold control of the Senate. I do not believe that the Democrats have the ability or the mandate to put in place many of the pieces of their radical transformation over the next 2 years. And, we will still be alive to fight, but that window is closing. So, this is where it will end up. I do believe it will end up at the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court will make a ruling on some procedure and some remedy that will effectively end the counting at some point.
And I'm not sure that I can give anybody a prediction as to how this is going to end one way or the other, but I will tell you, in my opinion, if for some reason Trump does not win or is not declared the winner of this election, and he feels that this election was stolen by the Democrats, look for Donald Trump to run again in 2024 and become a shadow presidency to Joe Biden. That would be interesting, if not free entertainment. Dr. Bruce, Jay, thank you so much for joining Of the People. We're going to leave it that we're in uncharted territory. Hope for nothing worse than a constitutional crisis, because what's beyond that could be a whole lot worse. Let's hope we don't get there. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
One thing's for sure, folks. We are in uncharted territory. We're in uncharted waters. And anyone who thinks that they know how this is going to end up has no idea what they're talking about. What do we know for certain? We know for certain that the Democrats were looking for a repudiation of Trump and his supporters. That didn't happen. 70 million people voted for Trump, for Make America Great Again, for Keeping America First. That's what we know. We know the country is therefore still divided. The lack of clarity, the lack of confidence level that this election was free and fair will resonate for years to come. We have to find a way to do better. We must do better with our system so that there is a confidence level at the election that your vote matters. Because unless we're going to break apart as two countries, which is clearly a possibility, or unless there's armed insurrection, which no one wants and hopes that we don't get to that point, we have to find a way to heal the rift. And it starts with the most fundamental one person, one vote, which right now is certainly half the country is very much in question about. We'll see how this plays itself out. It's going to go on for at least another 30 days, in my opinion. But these are definitely perilous times. And it's incumbent upon all of us to try to let the system work, but speak up when and where we can for the wrongs that we see, and to make sure that there is transparency in the process. This is more important than whether Donald Trump wins or Joe Biden wins. This is about country, and anybody who sees it any other way has no idea the damage that they're doing. I leave you with the following quote. It's not the people who vote that count. It's the people who count the votes. Joseph Stalin. Folks, I'm Robert Chernin from the American Center of Education and Knowledge, and we are Of the People. Thank you so much for joining us today.